Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's another fine mess for the House of Windsor this week as the Royal Family's senior members gather today for a summit at Sandringham. The Queen has ordered Prince Harry, Prince William and their father Prince Charles to sit down around a table and thrash out just how this privatisation plot by Meghan Markle is actually going to work. They're not doing it till 2 o'clock this afternoon because, of course, Meghan has to be able to chip in with her thoughts, I don't know why, by the way, on FaceTime because she's over in Vancouver Island at the moment. Over the weekend, we've seen videos of Harry cringingly telling the head of Disney, Bob Iger, that she does voiceovers shortly before she's signed up by Disney to do voiceovers. We've heard all about how the Sussex Royals are also now threatening to do a tell-all interview in America in which they would allege the royal family bullied them and forced them onto the sidelines. It really is quite extraordinary how this B-list actress has joined an ancient institution and is now attempting to destroy it from within. By the close of play today, we should have a decision on whether Harry and Meghan will keep the money, keep the house, or disappear off to Canada for good. And if it was a shambles last week, it is now a full-blown constitutional catastrophe for the Queen. You'd have to feel sorry for her, wouldn't you? We'll get the latest from Royal Author Robert Jobson, 0344 499 1000. Just like last week, we are live streaming the show on YouTube, Facebook and on Twitter, of course, as well. So get on it right now. Coming up, we'll find out why cutlery manufacturers are selling blunt knives, and we'll be asking what Dominic Cummings is up to with his latest plans to shake up the civil service as well. And don't forget, your voices are the ones we want to hear. 0344 499 1000. You can tweet us as well at Talk Radio. You can join the YouTube live feed, put your comments on there and get them read out. And we might even set you up with a Japanese billionaire who wants a girlfriend to fly to the moon with and presumably back again. You're listening to me and watching me live right here on Talk Radio. This is, of course, the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It's Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, if you had crawled out from under the stone under which you were dwelling over the course of the weekend, you would have seen nothing but wall-to-wall coverage of the royal family. Some great pieces written in the Sunday papers this morning. Fears Harry will tell all if his plans are thwarted on the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Harry in turmoil over cutting his royal links. The story goes that basically Prince Harry does not want to cut his royal family ties because he feels in some way indebted to the Queen, with whom up until this moment he had a great relationship. But he's torn because of Meghan Markle and her ambitions to turn the Sussex Royals, which is what their trade name apparently now is, into the new Kardashians. Public fury over at The Guardian. Royal soap Oprah on the front page of The Sun. Meghan Harry's US TV bid. We also saw, as I said on the start of this show, some terrible footage over the weekend of Prince Harry basically trying to sort of get his wife a job at Disney, which is pretty cringeworthy. If you haven't seen it, I'll retweet it a little bit later on. But let's talk to Robert Jobson, Royal Editor at The Evening Standard, Royal Author as well, a man who's lived through the entire Princess Diana scenario from start to finish, and how that ended up, everybody, of course, knows. Robert, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
This is quite an extraordinary state of affairs, isn't it? I mean, if we thought it was bad on Friday, it got worse over the weekend, and today the summit at Sandringham, I can't imagine what that's going to be like.
Well, it's extraordinary. You've got summits at Sandringham and all this sort of thing. That's not normally how the royal family have to behave. But I think that the Meghan and Harry have clearly either reached a tipping point, or it's left the royal family in this precarious position. And make no mistake, it's a very damaging position. You know, if you've got things like the Queen's being defied, as we revealed in the Standard last week, and Harry going public, in spite of her expressed wishes, threats of TV interviews and the like, I think the royal family, Prince of Wales, have to act very decisively and probably in a way that won't suit Meghan and Harry, because you can't be dictated to by Harry. He's not the direct heir to the throne. The monarchy exists really around the monarch only, and the rest are there to support the monarch. And clearly Harry and Meghan are not supporting the monarch. They're giving her one hell of a headache.
Well, exactly right. And I mean, your stuff last week was fascinating, Robert, as an insight into how this has kind of got to this point. But also, reading Tom Bradby's piece in the Sunday Times yesterday, who's a well-known friend of theirs, the guy that did that famous interview in Africa, at which she said that she wasn't really OK and she was struggling to come to terms with motherhood and all of that. You know, I mean, he was clearly writing something they wanted him to write, which I find quite insidious, actually.
Well, I mean, the reality is, I mean, they're going to get their point of view out there, and who can blame them for that? But I don't think the general public are particularly sympathetic with, if they want to go their own way, then, you know, give up your title, give up your benefits, give up the money that comes with it. And it's a lot of money. So,
It's a lot of money, and it's a lot of privilege. But the idea as well, Robert, ordinary people who are struggling to get into work today on the trains, right, packed in like sardines, sitting in traffic jams, driving around in taxis, driving around in transit vans, doing their jobs, are looking at this pair and saying, are you having a laugh? Are you seriously telling me that you actually are struggling to survive in the world?
Well, it's self-indulgent, isn't it?
And isn't it?
The problem we've got here is that they don't seem to be in the real world at the moment. Fact is that Harry, on that last trip to Africa, which was on, was, you know, lost. He seemed talking about his mother, and we all agree that that was a tragic loss. But to start blaming the media, which is a completely different beast to what it was in 1990, I know I was around at the time.
Yeah, right.
It's simply nonsense. And they've really had a pretty fair crack of the whip. I think that even the Prince of Wales, the Queen, and Prince William will say that. And they will say that actually that they've been embraced. Meghan has certainly been embraced. The problem she's got is that they are, you know, they're really not, it's not a constitutional crisis as it was in 1936, because really they're so far down the totem pole. You know, the Queen is at the top, then there's Charles, then there's William, then there's George and George's brother and sister, then there's Harry, and there's, you know, you've got to go a long way before there's any idea that they're going to be the King or Queen, which they're not going to be. So it's not causing a constitutional crisis, it's just causing a huge embarrassment to the Queen and the Prince of Wales. And for people that are turning around and saying they want to support the Queen and the Prince of Wales and the monarchy as an institution, well, they're not doing it. I mean, the simple way is, if you can't hack it and you don't want to continue as a member of the royal family, give up all the benefits, pay for it yourself. They've got something like £40 million between them. And pay for it yourself.
Mm. Well, this is the point. Trouble is, for people like Meghan Markle, 40 million quid's never going to be enough, because she wants to live the lifestyle of a multi-billionaire. She wants to be able to fly on private jets everywhere she goes. I mean, I don't know how she got backwards and forwards leaving Archie behind, or how she got the dogs out to Vancouver back end of last year. But I'm pretty sure there would have been some private jets involved. And, you know, once you're in that kind of area, once you're in with those kind of wealthy people, you know, suddenly 40 million doesn't sound like enough money. But how arrogant of her to join an institution, which she willingly did, and to then complain that it's sexist, that it's racist, that they've been bullying her, and that they need to change.
And it really isn't. And if they're going to go on air and say those sort of things, they're going to be almost a laughing stock, I would think. But the reality here is, one must remember, it's a very delicate point for the monarchy as an institution, because the monarchy exists purely on the basis of the people's will. And the fact is, if you do not have the backing of the people, then the monarchy as an institution will go. And they're blaming the media, which is the messenger of the people, for everything that's gone wrong in their lives. Well, I mean, that's a ridiculous thing to do in the first place, because they're simply a messenger. And actually, the story's not been that overzealous or over the top. I think they've been fairly straightforward. You know, they were taking private jets and criticised for lecturing people on climate change. I mean, that's pretty standard, I would have thought. But the reality is, it is a bit of a tipping point for the monarchy, because it's embarrassing that Britain at this time, when Brexit is on the cusp, we're about, you know, about to embark, and we need the royal family to be out there batting for Britain, which Prince Charles and Prince William and the Queen do every single day of their lives. And this really is quite a shocking indictment of the way things are going. I mean, they cannot possibly cash in on brand monarchy or brand royal, because that is outrageous to do that. And that's something that the Queen cannot really allow, because I don't think the public will stomach it.
No.
Equally, millions of pounds have been spent on this couple. Millions.
Yeah, I know. Absolutely right. And it occurred to me this morning, Robert, as I was coming into work, that she's behaving rather like one of those spoiled Premier League footballers who's not happy at the club and is kind of agitating to leave and go somewhere else. The difference, though, of course, is that she has no business cashing in on the Sussex Royals, as she wants to call themselves, or anything to do with the royal family, because if she is not willing to put the work in, as everybody else does, then why in the hell should she benefit from it?
Well, she can't. I mean, Mike, there's on that website that they produced, there are a number of huge errors that they've just printed as fact. You know, the security issue has got to be resolved. The 5% money that is public that they get is a nonsense.
Yeah.
It's just 5%. And they've got things completely wrong. And ultimately, I think that the Queen has to look at these two situations with two different hats. Obviously, as a grandmother, she's sympathetic to what's going on in her grandson's life. She knows he can be a volatile and fragile character. But most of all, at this moment in time, she has to wear the crown. And the crown has to be quite ruthless when dealing with people that they don't want to be part of it, as with the previous king, Edward VIII. Then once you're out, you're out.
Exactly. And what about that video where he's talking to the head of Disney about how, you know, oh, do you know she does voiceovers? I mean, that is almost cringeworthily kind of disgraceful, really.
Well, if, you know, I've never been a supporter of what the Republic movement said in this country. I think they're out of step, and I think the royal family have done a good job over the years. But that walks straight into what the Republic movement say. You know, they're utilising their position for financial gain.
They're
putting someone like Bob Iger in a position where both you sort of look at it and say, okay, money could be made by my company. But, you know, you're almost using your position there to actually force a deal. And that, you know, is a disgrace.
But also it's embarrassing. I mean, I actually had an exchange with somebody yesterday on Twitter who said it's just what any husband would do for his wife. Well, actually, no, it's not. I would not walk into a room full of people in black tie, go up to the richest guy there running the biggest company and say, by the way, why don't you give my wife a job? I don't think I would do that. And I don't think anybody that I know would do that.
It's not only that. When you're dealing with diplomacy, which is a very delicate issue, the royals are used for soft power diplomacy, whereby they're not travelling salesmen, but they're there to pitch and softly persuade people to come over to the British way. To, you know, they're not there with a bag full of trade deals. That's the follow-up stuff that's done by the ministers. But they're there to support Great Britain PLC, and that's basically one of the key roles that they have.
Mm.
Now, if you're going to start swapping Great Britain PLC, which is benefiting the whole greater public, which they represent, and start swapping that for Sussex Royal Inc. and starting building up your own financial position, that's a very dangerous position to put yourself in and to put the royal family in, because ultimately the royal family answer to the public. And if the public can see that they are not doing the job that they're supposed to be doing and they're actually cashing in on their status, then they're justified. They're justified in actually criticising them as being completely out of step with what is going on in a modern society, and that they could then be replaced by an elected system of government, of second, you know, of a head of state. And that is something that would be a disgrace, given their position is quite low ranking. And the Queen has done nothing wrong apart from serve her country ever since she was a little girl and told that she, through no fault of her own, would be inheriting the crown. Because at that time, another very selfish member of the family, her uncle, decided he would not do his duty.
Exactly right. And I was watching a piece over the weekend in which it said that Prince Charles himself does something like between 400 and 500 royal events every single year. That Prince Philip, who's often castigated as the man that never did very much, has done something like 23,000 in his life. And this is a time when, because Prince Andrew is not really in the picture as far as being able to show up at things anymore, they actually did quite need Harry and Meghan to do an awful lot of the engagements.
Well, they do. The bottom line is, you know, the Queen is in her mid-90s and still carries out 300 engagements a year. The Prince of Wales effectively is like a quasi-king, having to travel around the world and on behalf of the Queen, effectively as head of state, because she doesn't do long-haul travel, understandably, anymore. And, of course, he would need the backup of Prince William and Kate and his son, other son, and his wife, Meghan. The fact is, though, by them bailing out, they're putting an awful lot of pressure on William and his family,
yeah,
which is unfair. And there aren't enough people, and a lot of other organisations will suffer because they won't have somebody as a royal as their patron or their leaders, you know, or their figurehead. And that actually does bring in a lot of money and a lot of influence. But ultimately, it's the way it's been done that's been pretty appalling. Yeah. I understand if people are suffering and need to, you know, they need a break or they need to sort of...
Well, I don't understand.
Well, I do understand that.
What is it that is so, has been so terrible? Everybody, if I've asked this question to we don't know, because there isn't anything.
Well, we don't know that, Mike. I mean, we don't know if people are having, you know, mental breakdowns. We don't know if they're having, you know, postnatal depression. We actually don't know. But what we do know is that they did both sign up to be full members of the royal family. They have been given as much support as possible by the Queen and the Prince of Wales. And to actually treat the Queen in the way they did by defying, as we revealed in the Evening Standard, by defying her express wish, was pretty appalling, and they should be hanging their heads in shame over that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about this nonsense about Prince William's bullied us out of the royal family? Because that's the impression that's being given. Those are the kinds of tips and inside information that Tom Bradby was writing about.
Prince William, and he's not a bully. He's actually a kind-hearted, deep-thinking guy. And I think, actually, and I, you know, he was on the trip with him to Pakistan when he did visit there with the Duchess of Cambridge, and they did an excellent job for Great Britain PLC. It really did make a difference. And I think that to start making accusations through the back door of bullying is rather ironic, given what they've done. It's effectively hold a gun to the wall at the Queen's head and said, we're going to do what we want to do as we do, or not at all. I mean, I wrote in my book that there was that expression, what Meghan wants, Meghan gets.
Yeah.
Never a truer word seems to be.
No, quite. And what she's done is she's broken away Prince Harry from all of his old mates who weren't invited to the wedding. She's broken him away from his brother. She's now broken him away from his grandmother. You know, there's possibly no way back for him if it all goes wrong over on Vancouver Island, wherever they decide to go.
Don't expect them to be particularly... you know, they're trying to accommodate Harry and sort this as quickly as possible. But the worst thing the Queen would want was people like me and you on the radio and others discussing this endlessly and the front page endlessly. The other thing you've got to remember here is I was talking to a friend of mine. If this had been the other way around and she would be the new a fella who comes in and this had been a princess, there would be all hell to play about bullying. Because the fact is she has cut him off seemingly from a lot of his friends and his family. She seems to have cut herself off from her own family too. But if this had been the other way round and it was a guy that was doing this, a lot of people would say that he was a control freak and a bully.
Yeah, absolutely right. Got a great question here from Nina, who's tweeted in saying, how are we sure that Meghan's not going to record the summit meeting this afternoon for future use in some kind of TV programme? And actually, you can't be sure that she won't do that. I wouldn't let her into it, to be honest.
I don't think that she will be in on the conversation. I think that that was added as a suggestion from sources. I think that the Queen would expect anybody who wanted to have a conversation with her, she's 93 after all, to have the conversation with her face to face. So I think that any meeting that will take place when the Queen wants it to take place, not when Meghan decides it suits her.
Yeah, right. And Harry's going back to Canada, we understand, at the end of this week or possibly before that. I'm wondering whether we'll ever see them again.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think they've sort of made their mind up that they're going to withdraw from the public life in terms of the UK. All of their Sussex Royal plans seem to be international. I suspect that they're going to resettle on the west coast of America, and eventually once Canada is bored them as well, because I think ultimately Meghan is a California girl. I think that's where she wants to be. And
yeah, but she doesn't want to live in America as long as Donald Trump's the president. I mean, is she this woman? What's wrong with her?
Well, you know, the bottom line is they've got to be allowed to. They're going to have to settle somewhere. But I think if I was them, I would not be looking to be paid for by anyone else. And I know ultimately that's what they say they want. And if you've got any trust fund, I mean, you're supposed to have something like £40 million in trust funds, which will have to be heavily taxed if they take it out. And she's supposed to have a few million in the bank. Well, that's better than a lot of people, and I think they'll probably have to start cashing in their chips.
Yeah, it's absolutely appalling. I am appalled, I have to say, Robert. Thanks for your help as ever. Robert Jobson, Royal Author, Royal Editor of the Evening Standard. Look out for some of his stuff on the internet a little bit later on. Of course, we'll retweet whatever he puts out, because Robert is a man in the know. And we've got the Sandringham Summit supposedly coming up at 2 p.m. this afternoon. We'll bring you everything we can as it happens, as we can do it. But it's going to be a pretty tense meeting, I would imagine. Prince Harry has literally sold the royal family down the river by marrying this ghastly woman who's got no business being anywhere near the heritage of this great country of ours. I'm sorry. 0344 499 1000. What can we do with these two? What can we do with this pair? What should we do with Harry and Meghan, the prince and princess of absolute and utter wokedom? This is Talk Radio.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Not just now live on the radio, but live streamed on YouTube, live streamed, of course, on Twitter and live streamed on Facebook. Join the community, join the revolution, join all the people who are now enjoying watching me as well as listening to me, because some of you maybe later on in the week will get to pick what sort of haircut I get. You might be able to pick what sort of tie I'm going to wear. You know, there's all kinds of plans afoot of this fantastic project that we are now involved in. The Independent Republic has, of course, gone global. This has been by no means had any impact on Harry and Meghan, who have decided to go global as well. There's a massive meeting going on in Sandringham later on this afternoon, which we will bring you every detail of as soon as we can get it. But the Queen has basically summoned Prince Charles, his two sons, Prince Harry and Prince William, who are basically not even on speaking terms at this point, to all sit around a table and try and thrash out some kind of deal by which Meghan Markle and Prince Harry can leave the royal family behind, while at the very same time maintaining their presence in it. It's an absolutely ludicrous situation. Let's move on from that just for a second, though. We've got loads of you who want to talk to me, and you know the number if you want to get on to the most fastest growing radio station on the planet. 0344 499 1000 is, of course, the number. We're going to take a little step away from it, though, to talk to Charlotte Nicholls, Labour MP for Warrington North, newly elected in December, of course. She supports Emily Thornberry for leader and Angela Rayner for deputy, because today, later on today, they're going to narrow down the number of people who want to become Labour leader, and we're going to sort of move it on a phase. Charlotte, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Very good morning to you.
Now, I'm going to ask you in a moment why you support Emily Thornberry, but I'm rather alarmed to tell you that just as I was about to talk to you, I had a quick look and see what the latest news is. And according to the Daily Telegraph, Emily Thornberry looks set to become the first senior Labour figure to be eliminated from the contest to replace Jeremy Corbyn. So if that happens today, you'll have to start supporting somebody else.
Well, I'm actually supporting Rebecca Long-Bailey for the leadership. I nominated Emily Thornberry in the hopes that she would get onto the ballot paper to broaden the contest.
Right.
And to make sure that, as you said, she wouldn't be the first senior Labour figure to be eliminated.
Okay.
I don't think that Becky's got anything to fear from a completely open contest, and I think Labour members deserve to have a full choice of candidates.
Why do you think Emily Thornberry is so unpopular?
I don't think she is unpopular. I think it's just a very strong field of candidates, and I think that for a lot of people, you know, there are people that they would be supporting first, perhaps, but that doesn't diminish, you know, her capability as a candidate either.
No. It's unusual, though, isn't it, for you to support somebody like Emily Thornberry, who was not really very visible during the last campaign for Jeremy Corbyn to become Prime Minister, whereas Rebecca Long-Bailey is very much a Corbynite, isn't she?
I don't think she is a Corbynite. I think it's a little bit reductive to sort of...
Well, she supports all his policies, doesn't she?
Well, she was the architect of a lot of the most popular policies of Corbyn's, including Labour's Green New Deal.
Well, there weren't any popular policies. I think we should stop pretending that that was the case. If they were popular, you would have been in government, wouldn't you?
I think there was one policy that was deeply unpopular, and that was our Brexit position. But broadly speaking, the issues around, you know, investing in the NHS, and social care and things like this. These are things that people wanted to see.
Yeah, but don't you think it's a bit ridiculous to say that these were popular policies when you got beaten so badly and the majority for the Tories is now so huge that basically the Labour Party is going to be irrelevant for the next 5 years?
I don't think the Labour Party will be irrelevant in the next 5 years, but as I said, this was a Brexit election and our position on Brexit was one that voters weren't happy to...
Yeah, right, but if you get that so badly wrong, knowing what we do now... I mean, I was talking to a lot of people in the Labour Party before the election, Rebecca Longbelly being one of them, and I said to them at the time, this Brexit policy is never going to fly. But they stuck to it. They remained absolutely determined to have this kind of sitting on the fence position. And it proved to be a complete disaster. So if that's the judgment of people who were leading the Labour Party into the last election, why would anybody trust them to do anything else right?
Well, in terms of the judgment of people who were leading the Labour Party at the last election, I mean, you know, without getting too negative, there was one person in particular who'd be responsible for our Brexit position.
Keir Starmer?
Well, quite, yeah.
And he apparently is now the front runner to be in charge of the Labour Party.
He's the front-runner according to PLP nominations, but this is only stage one of the contest. You've still got to get through the next part to even be on the ballot paper.
Yeah, but he topped the YouGov poll as well, didn't he? He topped the YouGov poll by quite a substantial measure as well.
Well, again, you know, there's still the contest closes on April the 4th. It's very early on at the moment, and there's a lot of things that could happen between now and then.
Right. So you're supporting Rebecca Long-Bailey. Why do you think she's the best candidate?
I think she's the best candidate because she was the person that was responsible for the popular parts of our policy. When I was outdoor knocking in Warrington North, as an area that's responsible for a lot of the country's nuclear and really close to a lot of what's happening around hydrogen gas development, around tidal and so on, people were really interested in a sort of industrial policy for this community that was talking about creating really good, high quality, highly skilled jobs. Rather than, you know, this sort of uberification of the job market where everything's about 0 hours contracts on minimum wage.
Okay. But again, you're not really being able to affect any of that, are you? Whenever she's going to be, if she's put in charge of the Labour Party in April, what's she going to be able to do about that?
Well, there's a lot we can do about this because a lot of these things, particularly about hydrogen gas development, are being led by Labour local authorities, whether it's in the Mersey region or in Tees Valley. There are things that we can be doing before being in government, which hopefully, with someone like Rebecca Long-Bailey leading the party, will only be a few years away.
And what about the people in the party who think that the move lurch to the left was wrong? Where will they go? What will their votes do?
I don't think that the party did lurch to the left. I mean, a lot of the things that we were talking about, you know, were framed in terms of the narrative as being very radical ideas, but they weren't particularly. I mean, a majority of the public across all political parties, for example, support rail renationalisation. That's not something that's radical, that's something that's common sense.
Is it? Well, why didn't you get elected as the new government if everybody liked it so much?
Because, as I said, this was a Brexit election and our Brexit position was wrong and not one that voters thought...
Did you say it was wrong at the time?
I did, yeah.
What, when you were campaigning?
Yeah.
So what was your position then on Brexit?
My position on Brexit was that ultimately I respected the result of the referendum and that there were three tests for me for supporting a Brexit position put forward by any party, which was, one, that it protected jobs and employment in the bill itself. Secondly, that it didn't put the NHS sort of on the table for trade deals with any other countries. And thirdly, that for Warrington-based businesses who export, that there were trading arrangements in place so that they could plan for the future.
And so you voted for the withdrawal bill, presumably, last week, did you?
I abstained on the withdrawal bill because it didn't meet those three tests.
I see. And what about the anti-Semitism problem? What do you think Rebecca Long-Bailey will do about that? Because you've had people arrested now. Jess Phillips had to fire one of her chief aides for making anti-Semitic comments. You know, it's not going away, this story.
No, and I think that Rebecca Long-Bailey actually wrote a really thoughtful and considered piece in the Jewish News yesterday, not just accepting the Board of Deputies' proposals for how the party can move forward, but actually going further on a lot of them, showing real insight into what the problem's been so far and how we can move forward from it.
Yeah, but, I mean, people have been writing considered pieces for quite a few years now and nothing's actually changed.
Hmm. Well, you know, as someone who's Jewish myself, who is a Labour MP, this is something that, from conversations that have been had so far, from people's answers within the Parliamentary Labour Party hustings meeting where I made my decision on who I was backing, I believe that was Rebecca Lynn Bailey who was making the most credible case for what she was actually going to do. Because, as you said, it's about deeds, not words.
Well, exactly right. And as a Jewish person inside the Labour Party, do you feel that there are people inside the Labour Party still who are anti-Semitic?
Yes.
And what do you think should happen to them?
I think they should be expelled. And I think that one of the people...
Why can't that just happen? Why can't that just happen? Why does it have to take years and years and years for it to happen?
Because the Labour Party is a democratic membership organisation which has got a rule book which has got sort of quasi-legal status that means that it's actually quite technically difficult to do so without reforming some of that.
So it's technically difficult to throw anti-Semitic people out of the Labour Party?
It's technically difficult to remove anyone from the Labour Party for anything.
Well, you managed to chuck Alistair Campbell out pretty fast.
Auto-exclusions are pretty straightforward, but they can't be used for things other than supporting other parties.
Uh-huh. So it's all right to be anti-Semitic, but it's not OK to support Lib Dems?
Clearly, I don't think it's OK to be anti-Semitic.
Well, that's what Labour Party rules would suggest.
I don't think it's the Labour Party rules that suggest...
Well, you've just told me it's difficult to throw people out of the Labour Party on grounds other than them joining another party or showing a sort of acceptance of another party. So, effectively, what that means is, logically, is that it's worse to support the Lib Dems than it is to be anti-Semitic.
But joining another party is really easy to prove that someone's done that. When it's things, you know, arguments about harassment, for example... allegations of racism and so on, they need to be properly investigated.
Well, you've just told me you know of people in the Labour Party who are anti-Semitic.
Well, I know of people who claim to be in the Labour Party who are anti-Semitic, because unfortunately you only need to look at my Twitter mentions to see that.
So, what, you don't know if they're in the Labour Party or not?
Well, no, because they're anonymous trolls online.
Oh, I see. All right. So, what happens after today, then? What are you expecting the numbers to fall to? Emily Thornberry drops out of the race, presumably?
I mean, I'm hoping that Emily Thornberry will make it onto the ballot paper. I know that there are a number of MPs who are considering lending her their nominations in the interests of an open contest, as I did. After today, it then goes into the affiliate stage where people have to try and get the backing of different trade unions and affiliated groups to the Labour Party. And then, obviously, it goes to the members to make the final decision.
OK. And do you think you'll ever see a Labour Party in government in your lifetime?
Yeah, I believe that we will be in government at the next election.
Do you? Well, you probably believed that you might be in government the last election, but that didn't turn out too well.
To be honest, I didn't expect that we were going to be.
Really?
Although, I will be honest, the scale of the defeat was something that took me by surprise.
Yes, I think it took a lot of people by surprise, especially Jeremy Corbyn. Charlotte, thanks very much indeed. Charlotte Nicholls there, Labour MP from Warrington North, who was supporting Emily Thornberry, wants her to stay in the race, but is actually preferring to back Rebecca Long Bailey. It's going to be a long time before the Labour Party are in power, as far as I can see. But, you know... The old anti-Semitic problem continues to persist. Only at the weekend, Jess Phillips had to sack one of her chief aides for making anti-Semitic statements. We've had 5 people arrested by the police, no less, for being anti-Semitic. It's absolutely incredible how they cannot seem to get their heads around how to fix it. 0344 499 1000. Don't forget to watch us. Join the gathering throng watching us on YouTube, and you can comment on there as well. It's easy to chuck white straight men out, but difficult to throw anyone else out. Says Kay. Well, I think you might be right about that. Tell us what you think about Labour. Tell us what you think about Harry and Meghan. We've got loads of time. We're here till 1 o'clock. This is Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Now, not only live on Talk Radio throughout the nation and throughout the world, online, of course, as well, at talkradio.co.uk. You can now watch us on YouTube. You can watch us as well on Facebook. And you can watch us, of course, on Twitter. Loads and loads of you are joining in the debate on the YouTube feed as well. There's somebody calling themselves a vegan atheist says, we don't need a black leader, a woman, etc. We need the best person for the job. And that is something that the Labour Party just simply do not understand. And not too many of you terribly impressed impressed with Charlotte Nichols, I'm afraid, either. Here's one from Mr. Mac, who says, Emily Thornberry isn't an unpopular candidate. There are just a lot of strong contenders. So she's the most unpopular of the candidates. Then why can't these people ever actually admit anything? Who is on the Mike Graham show saying the Labour leadership contest is a very strong field? It's incredibly, monumentally, unbelievably, incomprehensibly weak, says Louise. And Sean says, utterly deluded, Labour Party position from your contributor, they are finished. Long Bailey is Corbyn in a skirt. Well, I mean, many of you are not very happy with the choices being put before you if you're a Labour Party member, because why on earth would you want to elect any of them to run a Welk stand? To be honest, none of them have got any clue about what the people want. It's why they got defeated so heavily in the last election and why they're probably going to get defeated very heavily in the next election. Let's talk to Nadia Essex instead about dating Japanese billionaires, because that might be far more intriguing. Nadia, very good morning to you.
Good morning. What a segue.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, what better way to get yourself out of a terrible conversation about the future of the Labour Party, which, let's face it, doesn't have much of a future, and then think about flying to the moon with a Japanese billionaire. This guy, right, Yasuka Maezawa, has decided that he wants to take one of the first voyages to the moon, but he's looking for a life partner to go with him.
Brilliant. My finger is hovering over the application button.
I'm surprised Meghan Markle hasn't put her name forward, to be honest.
No, she's sorted. She doesn't need to go to the moon.
No, she doesn't.
The world of her, it's all done for her. But it's, I mean, what an offer.
Well, it is an offer, but it's a bit weird, isn't it? Because in a way, and I was saying this before the show, it's not that much different from hiring an escort, is it? I mean, he says he wants a life partner, but does he, really?
Yeah, well, I would imagine that he probably does. I think most people probably do, like... You know, you can have your Playboy times, and when you have that much money, you really can, you can get anybody and anything that you want. What you can't buy is genuine chemistry and connection and that type of thing. So I just, yeah, I think that it's, I think it's genius. I mean, he's, you know, he's a billionaire. It's a, people go on Match.com for free and go through a tick of, you know, criteria for dating.
Mm.
And this guy's offering to take you to the moon, like, bring it on.
Well, I imagine, and you know more about this area of expertise than I do, I imagine there's going to be an awful lot of young women putting their names forward for this, because he says he's going to have a planned matchmaking event on his website, having just split up with his actress girlfriend, who's only 27, by the way. So maybe if you're over 30, you need not apply.
Perhaps. I mean, it says over 20 on his website.
Oh, that's all right, then.
Which gives me hope that, OK, you know, at least there's a boundary. But yeah, I think that, I just think it's a really, when you've got, like, for me, I just think you've got to take dating with a pinch of salt. And what a trip if you, even just the process of going to the going through the rounds or meeting the guy and seeing what happens, like, you've got to put yourself out there and, you know, if imagine if you got picked.
Yeah. Well, he's quite an eccentric character, this guy. Apparently, he used to be a drummer in a punk band, right? And earlier this month, he shared something like nearly $1 million between 100 randomly selected people who shared one of his tweets.
Yeah, I mean, generosity, that's a nice trait.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you'd never be equal partners, would you, with a guy like that?
I don't think... Do we have equality in this country between men and women still?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think 100%. I think we're on the right track.
I think most men would tell you they've got no chance of being equal with most women, because it's the women who wear the trousers and boss everybody around.
Quite.
You know, I mean, equality was never a thing as far as I'm concerned.
But yeah, it's about, you know, I've in my time, I've dated lots of men that are far wealthier than me, and I've dated men that are not as wealthy as me. And so there's always an imbalance somewhere.
What do you prefer?
The wealthier.
Funnily enough.
No, yeah, well, do you know what it is? And I'll tell you for why. And not because of the money, that's not the point. But because when I dated the wealthier guys, they had no problems in sharing. And we would go to nice restaurants and nice places and it wouldn't make them feel bad. But when I dated guys that didn't earn as much money as me, then I found myself sacrificing, you know, dinners in certain places to make sure that their ego...
That they didn't feel bad.
that they didn't feel bad that they couldn't afford, you know, and which was fine. I was happy to do it. I was happy to go to Nobu with my girlfriends and, you know, Wetherspoons with the boyfriend.
Right.
It wasn't an issue. I didn't mind it.
Well, listen, I'm very easy to please, by the way. I have no problem at all with you taking me out and buying me dinner wherever you want to go, as expensive as you like.
Yeah, but that's how it should be. But there's a lot of men that, well, this particular boyfriend, he hated it. And it made him feel very emasculated. And so I then had to, you know, sort of, as I say, sacrifice, because I had to lower myself to live to sort of his means.
Yeah.
Whereas when I dated the wealthier guys, it wasn't even an issue.
That's where it's all wrong, isn't it? I mean, a friend of mine always says it's like, you know, they say money doesn't buy you happiness, but it does buy you an awful lot of places you can go and be miserable in.
I take that a real offence to that saying, because you've only got to go down. Anyone that says money doesn't buy happiness has never really been skint. Because let me tell you, when you are broke and you are literally choosing between heating and eating, then if someone put £100 in your bank account, that would make you the happiest person. You think all your Christmas has come early. It's a really offensive saying.
Yes.
And I just don't agree with it at all. Money does buy you happiness because it buys you security. It buys you options. How many people do we know that have broken up in relationships because they've argued over money?
Absolutely. It's a very, very high set source. Well, I mean, look at Meghan and Harry. They're arguing over money even now. Even though they've got millions, it's not enough, apparently.
Well, I mean, that's the point, in that there is no level. You can have millions or nothing and you can still argue over money. And that's the point. You fundamentally have to try and get on in the relationship aside from money. But yeah, I think, you know, we just have to... Money does make the world go round.
It does. Now, I'm going to be seeing you soon on my new TV venture, Planks of the Week, which is a little bit later on this month. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Can I just say that I will hopefully be there not as a plank?
You won't be there as a plank. No, you'll be a panellist on the plank show. You'll be able to pick your own planks. It'll be great.
Amazing. I'm so excited. I'm already thinking. I've got some people on the shortlist ready
Good.
To go.
Excellent stuff. Great. Nadia, thanks very much indeed. Nadia Essex, dating expert, saying that, you know, there was a time when she might have been putting her own name down to join up with the Japanese billionaire who wants to take a life partner to the moon. It's a remarkable story. The entries close, by the way, I think, on January the 17th. So if you want to be picked by him, you have to get yourself along to his website and see whether you can get yourself down on the shortlist.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do, 0344 499 1000. It is Sandringham Summit today, Prince William and Prince Harry, so many princes and dukes and duchesses, sometimes it's easy to get confused, have come out with a statement in which they say that a newspaper article today, I believe it's one in the Times by Valentine Lowe, says that they have fallen out because William apparently wasn't friendly enough towards Meghan. They're saying the story is untrue. They're saying that it's false. They're saying that it uses damaging wording, and when they care so much about mental health, it's a very dangerous thing to say. Now, the words that are used in this piece are bullying and constantly being told their place, that kind of thing. Let's talk to Robert Hardman now, who is, of course, writer and author of Queen of the World, Daily Mail, writer at large as well. Robert, very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, mate.
Well, I mean, we've been through a few royal scandals in our time, you and I. This one really is quite remarkable, isn't it?
I think it's a crisis. It's not a constitutional crisis, but it's very much a royal family crisis. And as we've seen from the statement that's just come out in the last few minutes, the family are very keen to make sure that at least they try and stop this spiraling out of control, to stop it becoming too personal, stop it becoming a sort of vicious spat. It's ultimately a very sad internal family argument, and the Queen has always been one for consensus, for trying to sort things out in a non-combative way, and that's what she's going to hope to try and do today.
Sure. But this statement that's just come out from William and Harry about how their relationship is fine, plainly watching them and seeing what's been happening over the last year or so, fine is not perhaps a word I would use to describe it.
Well, yeah, they've acknowledged that there have been bumpy moments. I think they're keen. I think, as you rightly identified that word, bullying, I think it's something they're particularly cross about, because a sort of key strand of their whole mental health initiative that both of them have been promoting very actively now for some years, a key plank of that is anti-bullying.
Yeah.
So for one side or other to one side to accuse the other of bullying, that's pretty dangerous stuff. Ultimately, you know, blood is thicker than water. They are still close in many regards. Clearly, the events, not just of the last few days, but of the last couple of years, there have been tensions there in their relationship. And I think what this statement is all about is saying, look, you know, we may have had our arguments about stuff, but actually, you know, we're still close as brothers.
Yeah. But when you look back at the interview that Tom Bradby did, as we all did at the weekend, and when you read Tom Bradby's piece from the Sunday Times yesterday, which was clearly something that they wanted out there, as it were, there were very many undertones of that kind of complaint, weren't there?
Well, yeah, there were, and there was also within that interview the prospect of some sort of nuclear button.
Yeah,
you know, that there might be this interview. Which I think, as Tom Bradby said, it wouldn't look pretty.
Right.
That would be an understatement. I do think that to raise that even as a possibility at this stage is a pretty aggressive thing to do.
He didn't just dream that up. You know, he wrote that for a purpose.
He talked about, you know, he knowing the sort of things that would be discussed in that.
Right.
So clearly, that is something that in private they've been talking about. Whether that's likely to surface in today's discussions is another matter. I don't think it is. I don't think Harry knows that you do not make any sort of threats to the Queen. I mean, he wouldn't want to anyway. He's devoted to his grandmother. But I think that was there as a sort of a reminder perhaps to some of the officials as to, you know, what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Go on.
So I was going to say, do you think that, now that he's with his family, she's not there, he's likely to be less kind of, shall we say, rebellious, if you like, because having just spent the last 6 weeks with her and no other member of his own family, it might be easy to say that he's been sort of led astray slightly.
It certainly will be interesting to find out what the sort of the mood music was, certainly with the Duchess on the other side of the world. That is going to change the dynamic of the meeting. And everyone says she's going to be joining by conference call. My understanding is that she might be joining part of the conversation by conference call, but you don't really do conference calls with the Queen herself.
We've all
tried a few, and it's always a bit of sort of fumbling around with the buttons and someone saying, oh, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's not really what you want when you're having a particularly tricky and sensitive discussion with the monarch. So,
somebody pointed out on Twitter this morning to me, when we were talking to Robert Jobson, well, why on earth would you want her listening in on the conversation? She might record it for some kind of future broadcast. You know, I'm not saying that she would do that, but it's a risk.
There are a number of issues here that I think certainly that there needs to be an element of discussion just between the Queen, Prince Charles, and Prince William, because there are things here that go back way before the Duchess was ever on the scene.
Yeah.
The other Duchesses aren't there either. There's no question of sort of, you know, freezing Meghan out. Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall, and Kate, Duchess of Cambridge, they're not involved. For William as well, I think an important point, and I think this maybe goes to the reason for this swift response and this statement that's just come out. He's not just there because, you know, he's next in line to the throne after his dad. And he's not just there because he's Harry's brother. He's also there because whatever's decided today is going to set a template for his own children.
Mm.
If there is a new arrangement for the younger sons of monarchs and, you know, younger children of monarchs and how they operate, then the next people who are going to be governed by any new rules after Harry and Meghan are going to be William's children.
Right.
So, you know, he's very much involved in this. I think overall the everyone is going to try and keep the mood, you know, cordial. There are going to be a few tricky things to discuss. I don't think they're going to get into any seriously. I was told that don't expect any kind of blue sky thinking. It's not going to be that sort of meeting. It's going to be quite practical. I don't think they'll talk about things like money in the sense of security money, because that's not a question for the Queen. That's a question for the government. I think they will talk about the funding arrangements, and I think they will talk about just how do you propose to make this new arrangement work.
And presumably they might have something to say about what they can and cannot do in terms of commercial activity, because, you know, they can't just suddenly go off and launch this website called, you know, Sussex Royal and start selling pyjamas, can they?
Well, they can't, and they, you know, you've gone to the heart of it, Mike. I mean, the Sussex Royal, what are the three letters that come afterwards? It's .com. It's not a .org or a .gov or a .royal. It's setting out to be a commercial entity, and that in itself does raise questions, because how does it work if one day, or even half of one day, you're answering to your shareholders or a set of shareholders or a sponsor or a company, and then your next engagement is on behalf of the Queen or the government or the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
And these are tricky things. If one minute you're promoting doing something for you know, BP or Shell, and the next minute you're doing something on behalf of some environmental charity, it's you know, these things are tricky. I think, you know, the press are going to be there to we'll be looking at all these things with a very keen eye. It's not going to be an easy process, and everybody knows that. And I think a key part of this meeting is that, you know, let nobody delude themselves. This ain't going to be easy.
No, it certainly isn't. And are you expecting there to be some kind of statement issued afterwards? Because we're told that whatever happens, the Queen will want this to be done and dusted by tea time. She won't want to have it sort of dragging on.
I can't imagine we're going to get a kind of clear answer as to how it's all going to work. I think what we will get is an indication of what happens next. I mean, Harry's got one more engagement, which happens to be taking place at Buckingham Palace on Thursday, which is to launch the next Rugby League World Cup in his grandmother's home. Once that's done, I think we can expect him to then fly to rejoin the Duchess and baby Archie in Canada, and I think chew over what is sort of almost put on offer today.
Right.
I mean, today is an important step in a process, and we will learn how things are going to happen moving forward. But I can't imagine we're going to get too much detail.
No, and can you imagine a scenario whereby he's kind of allowed to keep a foot in both camps? Because I can't really. I can't see how.
I think it's really difficult, because I mean, I've been looking back at sort of examples. There was a small sort of narrow window in the late 90s between when his mother, Diana, Princess of Wales, she got divorced, and for a year or so up till her tragic death in 1997, she was trying to sort of forge this semi-royal, non-royal, but sort of royal path with a number of charities.
Mm.
And I remember going with her on a trip to Australia, and it had been organised by a charity, and it was largely being funded by a charity. And when we got there, there was this motorcade to drive her around, and we were sort of vaguely interested in, well, who's provided this, and that it had been sponsored by the local Toyota dealership. Do we want that sort of a situation where we have someone who's an emissary of the crown, of not just the British crown, but I mean the Queen is Queen of 15 other countries as well, in a sort of position where they're somehow beholden to commerce? I mean, we're all in favour of the royal family flying the flag and doing trade promotion, all that sort of thing. That's all good.
Yeah, but not for their own gain, though.
But the minute there's a sort of transactional dimension to that relationship, things can get awkward. And ordinarily, that's not a problem. I mean, most of the time, most people are perfectly sensible. They can see, you know, if companies sponsor X or Y or Z, that's what sponsors do. But there's always something in it for the sponsor. Mm. And what is that something?
You know? Well, quite. And it was very unedifying watching that video that came out over the weekend, was rehashed, I suppose, over the weekend, of Prince Harry meeting the head of Disney and telling him that Meghan was available to do voiceover work.
Yes, it doesn't it doesn't really, you know, it raises as many questions as it answers when we.
I mean, I'm available to do voiceover work, but I don't know anyone that knows the head of Disney, so I'm at a bit of a disadvantage. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, and how does it work when, for example, there is a sort of formal official event, and at the same time that there is. I don't know, one of their sponsors or one of their clients, right. For want of a better word. I mean, Rosie doesn't have clients, or it certainly hasn't until now. Maybe that's about to change.
Well, exactly. Well, Robert, it's going to be fascinating, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll be speaking to you before the end of the week because there's much more to talk about. Robert Hardman there from the Daily Mail, also writer and author of Queen of the World. Because the other piece of information we got this morning from the Daily Mail is that the house they stayed in over in Vancouver Island is owned by a Canadian billionaire by the name of Frank Giustra, who is apparently a friend of the Clintons. So, there we are. Marvellous, isn't it? This is Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.